Told After Supper by Jerome K. Jerome. Ghost Party. It was Christmas Eve. I begin this way because it is the proper orthodox, respectable way to begin, and I have been brought up in a proper orthodox, respectable way, and taught to always do the proper orthodox, respectable thing, and the habit clings to me. Of course, as a mere matter of information, it's quite unnecessary to mention the date at all. The experienced reader knows it was Christmas Eve without my telling him. It always is Christmas Eve in a ghost story. Christmas Eve is the ghost's great gala night. On Christmas Eve, they hold their annual fete. On Christmas Eve, everybody in Ghostland who is anybody, or rather, speaking of ghosts, one should say, I suppose, every nobody who is nobody, comes out to show himself or herself, to see and be seen, to promenade about and display their winding sheets and grave clothes to each other, to criticise one another's style and sneer at one another's complexion. Christmas Eve Parade, as I expect they themselves term it, is a function doubtless eagerly prepared for and looked forward to throughout Ghostland, especially by the swagger set, such as the murdered barons, the crime-stained countesses, and the earls who came over with the Conqueror and assassinated their relatives and died raving mad. Hollow moans and fiendish grins are, one may be sure, energetically practised up. Blood-curdling shrieks and marrow-freezing gestures are probably rehearsed for weeks beforehand. Rusty chains and gory daggers are overhauled and put into good working order, and sheets and shrouds laid carefully by from the previous year's show are taken down and shaken out and mended and aired. Oh, it's a stirring night in Ghostland, the night of December the 24th. Ghosts never come out on Christmas night itself, you may have noticed. Christmas Eve, we suspect, has been too much for them. They're not used to excitement. For about a week after Christmas Eve, the gentlemen ghosts, no doubt, feel as if they were all head, and go about making solemn resolutions to themselves that they will stop in next Christmas Eve, while the lady spectres are contradictory and snappish and liable to burst into tears and leave the room hurriedly on being spoken to for no perceptible reason whatever. Ghosts with no position to maintain, mere middle-class ghosts, occasionally, I believe, do a little haunting on off nights, on All Hallows' Eve, and at Midsummer, and some will even run up for a mere local event to celebrate, for instance, the anniversary of the hanging of somebody's grandfather, or to prophesy a misfortune. He does love prophesying a misfortune, does the average British ghost. Send him out to prognosticate trouble to somebody, and he's happy. Let him force his way into a peaceful home and turn the whole house upside down by foretelling a funeral or predicting bankruptcy or hinting at a coming disgrace or some other terrible disaster about which nobody in their senses would want to know sooner than they could possibly help, and the prior knowledge of which can serve no useful purpose whatsoever, and he feels that he's combining duty with pleasure. He would never forgive himself if anybody in his family had a trouble and he hadn't been there for a couple of months beforehand doing silly tricks on the lawn or balancing himself on somebody's bed rail. Then there are, besides, the very young or very conscientious ghosts with a lost will or an undiscovered number weighing heavy on their minds who will haunt steadily all the year round. And also the fussy ghost, who is indignant at having been buried in the dustbin or in the village pond, and who never gives the parish a single night's quiet until somebody has paid for a first-class funeral for him. But these are the exceptions. As I have said, the average orthodox ghost does his one turn a year on Christmas Eve and is satisfied.